It is July 22nd. We're continuing. We're with our creation class. We're in Parshas Vayera at the very end, finishing up the Akedah. And we have a few more points to make. And tonight we will, Mitzvah Hashem, finish the Parsha. We finished last time to the point where Abraham was about to shecht his son, and the angel said, appeared to him and told him not to. We talked about how Abraham still wanted to do something, and that he didn't, and then in the end he brought the ram in place of his son Yitzchak. And we said how that ram, everything Abraham did to the ram, he did it with the intent and the thought that this is as if it's my own son. Everything he did, it's like I'm doing it to my son. And therefore, in effect, Yitzchak was slaughtered, even though he really wasn't. But everything was done with such intensity as if it was actually being carried out. It is the closest anybody could ever come to sacrificing their son without actually doing it. And that's why Hashem considers it as if Yitzchak is sacrificed, as we mentioned last time. Now we get to the results of the Akedas Yitzchak. The test has been passed. And here on page 104 and 105, starting from Pasuk Yudal, verse 14, we now get the results. Now from here to the end of the parsha are the results of what happened. Now let's review the background. Remember that this has been the theme with Abraham and Sarah the entire time. Abraham and Sarah are building, and they're building a nation. And we said that's why Abraham and Sarah desperately wanted a child, and that was what Yitzchak embodied. Yitzchak embodied the Jewish nation, the people that are going to continue Abraham and Sarah's legacy into becoming a nation. Until Yitzchak is born, there is no nation. There is only Abraham and Sarah. There's not even a family. It's just Abraham and Sarah. There is no continuation of what they have done. And until Yitzchak is born, if Abraham and Sarah pass away and that is that, then they have done tremendous things in their lives, but they have not done any more than the other righteous people who have walked the face of the earth before them, such as Chanoch, Mesushelach, Noach, Shem, the other tzaddikim, Aver, the other tzaddikim that were in the 10 generations from Adam until Noach, and the 10 generations from Noach until Avram. They were, as we mentioned, great, great tzaddikim in those times. But nobody made it into a nation. Nobody forged a nation because they did not have the continuity that Abraham and Sarah were looking for. And with Yitzchak, they have their continuity. Now, Yitzchak's birth, of course, is the first step. And that's obviously extremely significant. But if the raising of Yitzchak doesn't follow the what is necessary to forge a nation, then it doesn't work either. So the job isn't over. The job of passing the torch to the next generation hasn't been completed until Yitzchak has gotten to a point where he can carry it on. And so the raising of Yitzchak, which included the chasing away of Yishmael and Hagar, that was part of it. And now with Akedas Yitzchak, the final stage is that Yitzchak's entire life, remember his birth, was a miracle. And it had to be a miracle. It had to be supernatural, as we said, because the Jewish people's existence is by definition supernatural. We only exist because of a supernatural event called the birth of Yitzchak. Now we only exist because of an incredible self-sacrifice of Abraham. If Yitzchak, as far as Hashem is concerned, has been sacrificed, as we mentioned last time. He hasn't really been sacrificed, but as far as the incredible self-sacrifice that Abraham and Yitzchak went through, to the point where Yitzchak is as if he is slaughtered before Hashem, then if you take that to its logical conclusion, we are all in that state. Because had Yitzchak been slaughtered, we wouldn't exist. We're only here because Yitzchak remained alive. But Yitzchak was slaughtered. And yet we're here. In other words, we're the same as Yitzchak. Yitzchak was slaughtered and yet he was alive. That duality, that Yitzchak was at the same time dead and alive, simultaneously, We are all like that. Because we only exist because he remained alive, and yet he was dead. So his offspring, which is us, everything that comes from Abraham and Sarah, the Jewish people, are simultaneously alive, yet slaughtered before Hashem, as a sacrifice to Hashem. Yitzchak's entire being was given over to Hashem at that time. We as the Jewish people are the same. And it's an awesome responsibility to be those ashes that are sitting in front of Hashem's heavenly throne is no small task. And that's an incredible responsibility. Nobody else has that responsibility, nobody else has that privilege but us. And yet we're alive just as Yitzchak was alive.
When you say that, because we're similar to Yitzchak, are you talking about the Kedusha, the holiness, the Hashem saying, Kadosh, you should Kadosh Hashem, Kadosh and Tiyah, we should be holy to Hashem?
It's the spiritual realm? It certainly translates into holiness. There's no question about it. But even in a physical sense, we shouldn't be here. Abraham slaughtered his son. I say that the way I meant it last week. He obviously didn't actually slaughter his son, but he did it with such intensity that it was as if he actually did it. And so that slaughtering is us, because we wouldn't be here. Yitzchak had no descendants yet. We all come after this event. And so whatever Yitzchak is considered, we are considered as well. And so our existence was already miraculous because his birth was miraculous. But now it goes even further, because his birth is miraculous, and now his life in itself is also, I wouldn't say the word miraculous, but I would say that it is a contradiction in and of itself, a positive contradiction. He's dead, but he's alive. He sacrificed, but he's serving Hashem still, alive. And we are the same. Now, here, this event is what solidifies Yitzchak. And now the torch is ready to be passed. Now, in order to pass that torch, Yitzchak is going to have to take over as the center of what is going on. Until now, Abraham and Sarah are the center of what is going on. We are going to move on over here with a few points, but bear in mind the next thing that's going to happen in the Chumash is Abraham is going to move out of center stage. We're going to deal, when we come back, Emir Hashem, in a month, we'll deal with the beginning of Chaye Sarah, which will have Sarah's death. And then Eliezer, Abraham's slave, becomes the center of attention for a lot of the Parsha, as he goes off to find a wife for Yitzchak. Mm-hmm. And so the stage shifts. The focus, the spotlight, is going to move off of Abraham and Sarah, and move on to first Eliezer, and then on to Yitzchak, and then of course on to Yaakov. And so this event is really the main event that will begin to move that spotlight off of Abraham. The focus of the Torah will move off of Abraham. And that's what we're going to be following here. These next few psukim from here to the bottom of the page, the end of the parasha, are going to be the beginning of the setting the groundwork to move off of Abraham. Pasuk Gedal, verse 14. Vayikra Avraham Shem HaMakom Ahu Hashem Yireh. Avraham called the name of that place Hashem will see. Asher Yeyomer Hayom Bahar Hashem Yireh. That will be said today on the mountain that Hashem will be seen. Now we talked about this pasuk a little bit when we talked about Shem being the king of Shalem, a city called Shalem, which means complete or peace. And here we have the place called Yireh or Yeirah, and you combine those two words and you get Yerushalayim. That's the contraction of Yerushalayim, and that is Shalem. Shem was the king of the Shalem, which is the same place over here as Avraham is, and Avraham is calling this place Yireh or Yeirah, which is the root to be seen or see, and it is referring to the temple mount itself, the Har Habayis, which becomes Yerushalayim. The contraction. And we talked about that contraction when we discussed Shem, and we discussed how he and Avram come together, the two forces of Shem and Avram come together to form Yerushalayim itself. What is meant when it says Hashem will see on the mountain, Hashem will be seen? So Rashi explains that Hashem will see Akedas Yitzchak, Hashem will see for all generations that which took place on this mountain from between Abraham and Yitzchak. That will be said today, which means any of us reading the Chumash at any time will say, it is said today on the mountain that Hashem will be seen. Meaning that a direct result of Hashem seeing Akedas Yitzchak is that Hashem will be seen on the very same place. Abraham and Yitzchak, by performing this incredible self-sacrifice, managed to literally bring Hashem's presence, the Shekhinah, down to that mountain. They literally reached a hand up into heaven, grasped hold of Hashem's presence, and pulled it down to the mountain. And now Hashem is seen upon that mountain. And we know that that is the holiest place on earth. That is where Hashem's Shekhinah rests. That is where, as I've mentioned before, and as an analogy, if you think about the spiritual realm being above the physical realm, and there's a funnel that funnels spirituality down into the physical realm, that funnel comes down to Yerushalayim. And from there, it spreads to the rest of the world. But that is the focal point of the meeting of heaven and earth. That's the focal point where the Shekhinah rests. Now, you could argue Har Sinai, which is where the Torah was given, there the Torah says explicitly that Hashem came down and rested on Har Sinai, which is true, but that was a temporary place. Hashem doesn't remain there for all generations. For whatever reason, the Torah was given there, which I have spoken about in the past, and we will discuss, please God, when we get to it. But the place where Hashem's Shekhinah never really departs is the Har HaBayis. Now, Hashem's Shekhinah certainly did depart, which is why we observe Tisha B'Av in just a few days, tomorrow night. It is because Hashem's Shekhinah departed. And I will speak about this further tonight at 9:15. But the even though Hashem's Shekhinah has departed to the point where we don't have a Beis HaMikdash, we have no temple, but a lot of the holiness remains. For example, we know that you can't walk beyond the wall, the Kosel, the Western Wall, today, unless you go through a very thorough purification process. You can't just walk back there. There's the Hashem's holiness does remain in that place to some extent, although it is greatly diminished from what it was when the Beis HaMikdash stood. So that is accomplished by Abraham and Yitzchak. They actually make the Shekhinah be seen in that place. Now, they didn't make something from nothing. As we've mentioned many times, Abraham always knew that this place was the holiest place on earth. And he had He was drawn to it, to this place, knowing that this was the main place where Hashem's Shekhinah was on earth. But until Avraham came there, it was potential. Avraham turned it into actual. He actually brought the Shekhinah down. And that's where the Shekhinah remains forever after. Because of this, that Hashem will see Akedas Yitzchak, therefore Hashem's Shekhinah will be seen forever after on this mountain. When it says that it will be said today, well, what does today mean? Does today mean when Moshe Rabbeinu wrote these words? No. Whenever the Torah says Hayom today, it means whenever you're reading it. The reader reads today at their time. So this word Hayom today means the Jew reading this sentence in the before the Beis HaMikdash was destroyed, the Jew reading this sentence in the 3rd century, in the 5th century, in the 10th century, the 12th century, makes no difference. When you read these words, it's the same thing. Hashem's Shekhinah, it will be seen on this mountain, constantly, consistently, today, whatever today is. Ma'ikra malach Hashem al Avraham shenis min ha-shamayim. And the angel of Hashem called out to Avraham a second time from the heavens. So the first time was to stop him. Now, the second time is to state the result of what had happened. Vayomer, he said, Bi nishpati num Hashem. I swear in me, says Hashem. Obviously, the angel was quoting God. I swear by my name, says Hashem. Ki yan asher asisa asa davar hazeh, for because you did this thing, v'lo chasachta es bincha es yechidecha, and you did not hold back your son, your only one, Ki barech avarechecha, I will bless you. Veharba arbes zaracha kechochavei hashamayim, and I will increase your seed like the stars of the heavens. Vechachol asher asfas hayam, and like the sand on the seashore. Veirash zaracha is shar oyavav, and your children will take over the gates of their enemies. Veisbaruchu vezaracha kol goyei haaretz, and they will be blessed in your children, in your seed, all the nations of the earth. Ekev asher shamata bekoli, because you listened to my voice, which means that blessing comes from Hashem, not to anybody, but to us. Which means the bracha comes from us, and from us goes to everybody else in the world. There is no bracha that comes down to this world that does not pass through the children of Avraham. And it goes from us to others. That is a result of what has happened here. And, as it says, Avraham's seed will be increased like the stars and like the sand of the seashore.
He's repeating what you said to him earlier.
Okay, so that's a good question. Does this mean that it wasn't going to happen before? How do we understand that? Isn't it true that Hashem had already promised that his seed would be like the stars? What is being said over here?
But Hashem knew Avraham was going to. I mean, isn't a lot of this for us reading it now?
That is true. But it seemed before that he had already deserved it.
He promised it in Islam. When you come to look up, I'll make you many of the stars.
Yeah. The thing is this, that we've seen this before, that Hashem has said, because of this, you'll get the land. We saw that with the Bris Milah. Mm-hmm. We saw that the Bris Milah was a guarantee for the land and a guarantee for children. And yet, then we talked about how the test of coming to Abraham's house, and the fact that Abraham wanted those guests, that also is what made him deserve the angels to come to his house and announce the birth of Yitzchak. There can be several reasons for the same thing. That doesn't mean it would necessarily not have happened without the second thing. Sometimes the Torah will do this. The Torah will list two or three or four causes for the same event. Sometimes it's positive, sometimes negative. The Torah lists not one, but I can think off the top of my head three different reasons why Moshe Rabbeinu was not allowed to go into the land of Israel. We know it's because he hit the rock. But there are a couple of other reasons given. How is that to be understood? Is it which reason is it? So the way you understand that, you have two methods of understanding that sort of thing. One method is that it's true, let's take the positive. It's true that his children would be like the stars regardless because of the previous promise. But it can be done one way or another. There can be a positive way, and then a more positive way. Things can be done one way or even better. When there's more causes for the same thing, that means that it will be done in a better way. That's one way to understand it. Another way to understand it is, and the Gemara talks about this, that Hashem can make a promise to somebody, but the promise is based on the way the person is now. If the person sins, then he can lose the promise. Because the promise is not unequivocal. The promise is based on the way you are, you deserve this. Now, if later the person slips up and doesn't do what they're supposed to do, in the end they won't necessarily get it. That's why Yaakov was afraid of when he ran away to Laban. He was afraid of, when he came back to Esav, and he was afraid of Esav hurting him. Why was he afraid? He was afraid that even though Hashem had promised to protect him, but maybe he had not lived up to that promise. Sometimes when Hashem reiterates a promise, what that means is that now it's irrevocable. At that point, it's going to happen no matter what. That's the way to understand with Moshe Rabbeinu. There were a couple of very, very minor things. Everything he did was minor. But there were a couple of very minor things which already made Hashem say that he was not going to go into Israel. But they were always, and always were subject to change. Moshe could have rescinded that decree. Once he hit the rock, it became sealed that he would not go in, no matter what. Hashem said to him, stop. In fact, it's this week's parasha. It says, Voeschanan el Hashem, I beseeched Hashem. And Hashem said, no more. Don't doubt it anymore. You're not going to go in. Because once he hit the rock, it became solidified. So here, it could be the same thing. That the promise of making his seed like the stars, etc., may have been based on the way he was then, but not necessarily unchangeable. But once this happened, then it became etched in stone. That's another way to understand. So those are the two possibilities when you see several causes for the same bracha or the same punishment, whichever way you go. Here, in addition to that, this really was said at the Bris Milah also, but the last pasuk we just read, that everybody will be blessed through your children, which means your children are the center of history. Your children are the spotlight of the world. Everything will come through your children. That is also based on the Akedas Yitzchak. And then, we have the last pasuk in this paragraph, Vayashav Avraham el Mi'arav, and Avraham returned to his lads, those are the same lads that he had left behind, Vayakumu Vayalchu Yachdav el Be'er Sheva, and they got up and they went together to Be'er Sheva, Vayeshev Avraham Be'er Sheva, and Avraham settled in Be'er Sheva. Now, when they left them behind, they said, stay here with the donkey. And you recall, and then Avraham said, and I and the lad will go until there, until here, and we will bow down and we will return to you. Now, if you'll recall, this was 2 weeks ago, we said then that Avraham was saying to them, they were called Ne'arim the entire time, Avraham's lads. Then he said, you stay here with the donkey, and I and the lad will go on. And I pointed out to you that that was an exclusion, that they were being set back. You're staying here with the donkey, like the donkey, that's all you matter for now, and me and the lad, meaning Yitzchak was now the important one, will go on, and we will return. Now they come back, and again they're referred to as the lads. Avram returned to his lads, Yishmael and Eliezer. Why are they referred to as his lads?
Yitzchak's not there.
Where's Yitzchak?
We don't know. He didn't come back with him. Mm-hmm. Doesn't say. So Avram returned. Doesn't say Yitzchak returned.
Okay. It does not say where Yitzchak went, which is true. It only says Avram returned to his lads.
Yeah, but then it talks about the birth of Rivka.
Okay, we're going to get that in a minute.
Right.
Now, our assumption is that Yitzchak went with Avram, and just what he just wasn't mentioned. But this is part of the whole thing that happened. Yitzchak is gone, because Yitzchak's been sacrificed. Now, he wasn't really sacrificed, but he was sacrificed.
Well, why do you keep saying that? You know that he really wasn't.
But
I understand, like, it's as if he was, but
It's true he's walking around as flesh and blood, but he's like an angel on earth.
Yeah.
That's what it's like.
He goes on to marry and
right.
lives like a man.
Right. But
he's not discovered as a lad anymore.
Yitzchak, for example, is never. Yitzchak later on will find is not allowed to leave Eretz Yisrael.
That's
no, why can't he leave Eretz Yisrael? Because he became a carbon. He's wholly a carbon. He's no longer a normal human being. It's true, he lives and breathes and does everything that we do, but it's on a totally different plane. Yitzchak has moved beyond the human condition. He's a new person. He's a totally different being. He's Jewish. You understand what I'm saying?
No.
I just want to quote the correct source for this. It is brought in several sources, the earlier sources, that there are five levels of creation. There are really four, and then there's a fifth. And many of you have heard this already. There's domain. Domain means inanimate, stones, sand, etc., water. Then there's tzomeach, things that grow, plants, trees, grass. Chai, that which lives, animals, insects, birds, fish. Midaber, those that speak, which is human beings. And then Yisrael, Jews. We look like everybody else. We appear like everybody else, We do what everybody else does, but we're on a different plane. That's also an awesome responsibility. That's what Yitzchak became right here. He moved out of the realm of everybody else. He's no longer spoken of as one of the crowd. He is his own level. His own entity. That's right. So when Avram comes back and he picks up his lads, Yitzchak is separate and apart. Now, was he there or not there? I don't know. It could be he wasn't even there. It could be he went somewhere else. But even if he was there, he's separate and apart. He's a different entity. They return to Be'er Sheva. It is somewhat of a question why they went back to Be'er Sheva. Because we're going to find in Chayei Sarah that Sarah died in Hebron, not in Be'er Sheva. That's where she was. So why they go back to Be'er Sheva, and how did Sarah get from Be'er Sheva to Hebron? The last we saw of them before Akedas Yitzchak was that they were in Be'er Sheva. And actually Rashi tells us that right before the Akedah, Abraham and Sarah returned to Hebron. So they had been living in Be'er Sheva, they went back to Hebron, and that's where Hashem said to Abraham, "Kachna espincha sichidcha shatas yitzotek Yitzchak," and they went to Akedas Yitzchak. But then they went back to Be'er Sheva, but Sarah is in Hebron. And then when Sarah passes away, Abraham goes to Hebron to eulogize her. This is somewhat of a question. I don't have a good answer to the question. I'm sure there are great answers to the question. I don't have them with me now. And perhaps we'll save that for when we do Chayei Sarah in a few weeks, about a month. We'll hopefully discuss that point. If I remember
this
to...
It's number 19 from Rabbi Hirsch.
What's that?
I'm looking at this. Is it his opinion that they became as one? They aren't the same mind. I mean, is that his understanding of why Yitzchak's not mentioned in coming back?
He's saying that they didn't become prideful, that they went together with the lads, that they went along together with the lads, and didn't think of themselves as being haughty. You see, that was the other point I was going to make. I first was going to, and then I decided not to, but now I will. That when they returned to their lands, let's say Abram returned to his land, there's a responsibility here. You see, that we Jews may be on a different plane, and it's true, but at the same time, there's a responsibility to everybody else, and that's what he's demonstrating over here: the responsibility to his lads, and they're not abandoned and not ignored or forgotten. They are picked up with them and go together back to Be'er Sheva. Was after these words. Abraham, it was told to Abraham, saying, "Hinei yaldam milkagam hi banim lenachar achicha." Behold, Milka also she gave birth to children for Nachar, your brother. Do we have a pen to write with? What do we have here? I should have brought something. Okay. We have to do this No, we'll just... We'll have to be a dry erase. Okay, you can do this?
Yeah.
I'll hold it up. Hold this up for everybody?
Yeah.
I'll just hold it up. Okay. We have Abraham. Okay? Abraham... And Abraham has two brothers. I had this chart up one time before. Abraham has two brothers. Who are Abraham's brothers? Netarach is the father.
Nachor.
And Haran. So he has a brother named Haran, and he has a brother named Nachor. Okay. Haran has three children. And they are?
Moses, one of them.
I mean, Sarah and...
Lot.
Okay, he has Lot. It's true. And he has two daughters. Sarah is one of them. Okay. And the third one is?
Milcah.
What?
Milcah.
Milcah. That's right. The one we just mentioned here, Milcah, who is a woman. Okay. Avraham marries his niece, Sarah. And Nachor marries his niece, Milcah. So Haran has three children. Two of his daughters marry his brothers, Avraham and Nachor, which is a permissible marriage. From Avraham and Sarah, of course, comes Yitzchak. And from Nachor and Milcah, we're now going to see a bunch of children being born. And the one that we're most interested in is Bisuel. Bisuel, as we will see, is going to have a daughter named, he's going to have two children that we care about. He'll have a daughter named Rivka, who of course will marry Yitzchak. And he will have a son named
Lavan.
That's right. And of course, Lavan will have two daughters named Rachel and Leah. And of course, Yitzchak and Rivka have a son, Yaakov, who marries Rachel and Leah. Do we have, is the chart in here somewhere?
Yeah.
I go through all the trouble for another?
What page?
77.
Thank you.
This is not as aesthetically pleasing. Yeah, it's not as aesthetically pleasing as my chart.
Yeah.
Okay. At any rate, so here, Avraham is informed that his brother Nachor, with his wife's sister and his niece Milcah, have children. Milcah has given birth, also she, children, to Nachor, your brother. Es utz bechoro ves buz achiv, my two favorite brothers, the two brothers' names, Utz and Buz. Utz his firstborn, and Buz his brother, ves Kmuel avi Aram, and Kmuel the father of Aram. That's three, and Aram the son of Kmuel. Ves kesed, ves chazo, ves pildash, ves yidlaf. Kesed, Chazo, Pildash, and Yilaf is 7. Ves Besuel, and Besuel is 8. Uvesuel Yalad is Rivka. Besuel has a daughter named Rivka. Shmona Ela Yaldam Yilkal and Achar Achi Abraham. These 8, Milcah has given birth to for Nachor, the brother of Abraham. Ufilak Sho, and his concubine Ushma Reuma. Her name is Reuma. Fatel Gamhi as Tevach, ves Gacham, ves Tachash, ves Macha. She also had. She also gave birth to Tevach, Gacham, Tachash, and Machah, 4 sons. Which means that Nachor has 12 sons. 8 from his wife, Milcah, 4 from his Pilegesh, his concubine, Reuma. 8 and 4. First of all, 12. What does that remind you of? The 12 tribes. So Nachor has had his 12 tribes. And 8 are from his wife. 4 are from his Pilegish's concubine, which is reminiscent of Yaakov, who has 8 children from Rachel and Leah, his wives. Mm-hmm. 2 from Rachel, 6 from Leah, that's 8. And 4 from the Shvachos, they weren't concubines, from the Shvachos, from the maidservants, yeah. From Bilhah and Zilpah, 8
but
and 4.
We don't ever hear of them.
What's that?
We never hear of them.
Of?
The last 3, 4.
We only hear about the one.
You mean of these 12?
Yeah, no, we don't hear the last or the 4 from the concubine.
Well, yeah, well, even the other 8 we don't really hear of. They're really not spoken of so much, although they are hinted to in other places for other reasons. But you are correct that he has these tribes, and Rashi tells us that Milcah and Nachor have what Avram and Sarah eventually will have, not in this generation, but they have 12 tribes divided up as 8 and 4. from this group comes the women of the Bnei Yisrael. Sarah already comes from Haran, Milcah's sister. And then, as we pointed out, Bethuel has Rivka, who becomes Yitzchak's wife. And then Bethuel's son, Lavan, has two daughters, Rachel and Leah, who become Yaakov's wives. So our imahos, our matriarchs, come from this branch of the family, which is why this branch of the family is so significant. Now, let me ask you a question. Did Milcah have eight sons simultaneously? Did she have, what would you call that, octuplets?
Seriously doubt it.
You seriously doubt it, right? I would also doubt it. I would also doubt it. But what does this mean? It was after these words, and it was told to Avraham saying, behold, Milcah has also, she's also given birth to sons, to Nachor, your brother. There's Utz, his firstborn, and there's Buz, his brother, there's Kemuel, who's the father of Aram, by the way. Just be aware that not only did they have sons, but they're also grandparents, because Kemuel has had Aram. And there's Kasdan, and there's Chazal, and there's Fildash, and Yidlaf, and Bethuel. And Bethuel has also had a daughter, which means a grandparents again, and he's had Rivka. And then there's also the concubine, who's had the other four. The Abraham was so out of the loop. I mean, there were no birth announcements until now. How many years have gone by that all these children have been born, and the next generation, two grandchildren are born?
They were on hold until Yitzchak was born.
They were on hold. They weren't born.
Right, that's what I mean. They were in preparation.
We didn't need to know until now.
Okay. So when Yitzchak was born, so then now all of a sudden, boom.
It released, you know.
Well, it must be born. It's because of the Akedah that they're telling it, so.
Okay, I'm not kidding, right. So what Mrs. Wittenberg said, right, we're going to go, right. It's not that they were all born right now, but now they matter. You see, until the Akedah, the spotlight is still on Abraham. And therefore, the future, Yitzchak, who he's going to marry, Yaakov, who he's going to marry, they're not relevant yet. They, for all intents and purposes, don't exist. Do they physically exist? Were they physically born? Do they walk around? Do they talk? Yes. Do they matter in the grand scheme of history? No. They're irrelevant until the Akedah. Once the Akedah happens, and now the spotlight is about to move from Abraham to Yitzchak, well now, hold on, who's Yitzchak going to marry? And after Yitzchak marries and has children, who's the next one going to marry? Where is the nation going to come from? Now we're ready for the nation. The stage has been set to pass the torch and move on to the next, and go on and form those 12 tribes that are going to form the Bnei Yisrael. So here, Avraham is told, and we are told through Avraham, because Avraham was informed as well, of the birth of all of these children. Did Avraham know of them at all? Could be yeah, could be no. It sounds from the Pesukim that Avraham didn't know at all. There would have been no need for him to know. It was irrelevant at this point. Yes, okay, you want to know that you have nephews and nieces, whatever it is, but it wasn't relevant to the grand job, the responsibility that Avraham was doing. His mission was not impacted by these births until now. Now it becomes crucial to know where the matriarchs come from, because now there's going to be matriarchs. Until now, there was just Avraham and Sarah.
Now they have to
make
a shidduch.
That's right, now they have to shidduch. Right. But it's more than the shidduch, you're right. But it's the whole branch of the family we need to know about, because now they become significant. They did live far away by their standards. Remember, they lived back up in Haran. They lived up in which would be Babel, Babylonia. And Yaakov will eventually go back there. Eliezer is going to go back there in Parshas Chayei Sarah. So they were some distance away. But if it was just a question of news, I would imagine the news traveled somewhat, somehow. People traveled back and forth and news got around. But now they become significant to history. They become significant to Avraham and significant to us by extension. And so here we are informed of the birth, primarily the birth of Rivka. And that's the important name in this list. Because, of course, she is going to become the wife of Yitzchak. And that leads us into the next parsha. Now, I don't want to really begin Parshas Chayei Sarah, but I want to make one observation to you about Chayei Sarah. And it is from this observation which we will pick up again in 5 weeks. And that is that the next thing that happens is we are told that Sarah died. We're told of the life of Sarah and her death, how old she was, and that she died, and that Avram came to eulogize her and to bury her, to cry for her. And then we have the whole episode with the Ma'aras HaMachpelah, with the purchase of the Ma'aras HaMachpelah. There is a Medrash that says, and Rashi cites it, that why did Sarah die at this time? Because I'm just trying to remember who came and told her. Was it the Satan?
Yeah.
Rashi doesn't say it was the Satan. There's a Medrash that says that. Rashi says that it was through being informed about the Akedah Yitzchak, and her son was about to be killed, and her soul departed upon hearing it. The simple meaning is there was shock. Just the shock of hearing that her son was about to die, and thinking that it actually happened, that shock is what caused her soul to depart. There are many, many, many explanations said about it that make it that her soul, with all its spirituality, hearing upon Yitzchak's incredible thing that happened with Avraham and Yitzchak and all the self-sacrifice, and her soul simply departed because of that incredible spirituality that was going on, the holiness that had happened. The observation I want to make, though, is, however we're to understand the Medrash, she died right after Akedas Yitzchak, and as a result of Akedas Yitzchak. That's clear. Whether it was shock, or whether it was spirituality, whatever it is, it was clearly a result of Akedas Yitzchak. We mentioned some result that happened, that now Yitzchak is the center of history, now he's become like an angel on earth, now we need to know about Rivka's birth. Then Har HaBayis becomes the place, the Temple Mount becomes the place of Hashem's Shekhinah. All these are results of Akedas Yitzchak. Her death is also a result of Akedas Yitzchak. Why is that? How do we understand that? So the observation I want to... Yeah, go ahead.
Well, you were just saying that Abraham is no longer going to be this country.
Okay.
Moving out, mm-hmm. So therefore
Sarah
would have to move out too.
Okay, so the spotlight has to move off of both Avram and Sarah. Now Avram doesn't die yet, because as we will see, he still has he has some things that he is supposed to do. He has to send Eliezer to find a wife for his son Yitzchak, which is part of the obligation of a father to ensure that there is shiduchim made for the children, but. Also, we're going to find later that Avram is going to remarry. He's going to remarry Hagar and have other children who will be other nations of the world. Because Avram is Av Hamon Goyim. He's the father of many nations. So even though we are the main one, but he has other nations which have to come from him still. So his mission is not over. Sarah's mission is obviously over. That's why she dies. Sarah, clearly a great tzaddikess, that's an understatement. Clearly someone who has completed her mission has not left this world without completing her mission. The mission is over. She passes away. Her mission ends with Akedas Yitzchak. And why is that? Because Sarah successfully brought Yitzchak into the world at the age of 90, successfully raised him, successfully chased away those who would undermine her influence and would draw her son Yitzchak away from Hashem, and she successfully chases away Yishmael and Hagar, and then clearly her influence over Yitzchak is what gives Yitzchak the ability to pass the Akedah with flying colors. Even though she is not involved in Akedas Yitzchak, but she doesn't die before Akedas Yitzchak, because her mission isn't over yet. Because it is only through her influence, and through her having raised Yitzchak, that Yitzchak is able to pass that incredible test. And so she remains alive, because even though she's not actively involved, but everything that's happening, that Yitzchak discerns that he's going to be the sheep for the slaughter, and that he's happy to do it, and that he's willing to do it, and he says to his father, "Bind my arms and my hand, my arms and my legs, so that I don't flinch." And he sticks out his neck, and he's willing to be sacrificed. All of that is clearly an expression of his mother, of the incredible emunah and bitachon, the incredible trust and belief in Hashem that his mother imparted to him. And therefore, she's still alive. But once he demonstrates that he has learned from his mother, her mission is over. She has made it. She's accomplished her mission on this world. She has produced the next generation, not just physically produced, but spiritually raised the next generation. She's a woman who managed to go 90 years never flinching in her belief in Hashem, never wavering in her positive attitude towards Hashem, even though she desperately wanted a child, and then managed to raise that child in a way that exceeds everything that was expected of her. Now her mission is over, and now she passes away. And that is why, directly after Akedas Yitzchak, the first thing we read about is Chaye Sarah, is the fact that her life and her death. And that is what we will continue when we pick up again Mitzvah Hashem in 5 weeks.